हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय हो हरि भव गौनिताय जय ओके सो देन आई थिंक दैट्स व्हाट कैंटो वन Chapter 1, then like something 12, 13, there's the third question or something, yeah.
Yeah, verses 12 to 16, question 3. For what reason did the Lord take his birth from Devaki? The sages continued, O Srila Sutta Goswami, you know for what purpose the Supreme Lord appeared in the womb of Devaki and played the part of a human being. Footnote 6. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1.1.12, The Lord appeared to broadcast his wonderful qualities, not to relieve the burden of the earth. This is proven by Kunti's conclusive statement. Some say that you appeared to engage those suffering in the material world due to their actions covered by ignorance and desire in hearing and remembering about you to attain prema. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.35.
Yes, so that means that Krishna removes the burden of the earth, you know, means the demoniac mentalities and that are just getting too much in volume, that it ruins the atmosphere for nice, you know, practice of Krishna consciousness. That's just a side feature. The main thing is just coming to attract the devotees. Because the point is that the jivas, then the attraction is to the qualities. You see, the devotees, it's qualities, because it's like in the nectar devotion, then it's you have the basically the explanation of the path of bhakti. You know, starting with samanya bhakti, where they've, you know, just taking up the general elements of the practice that's there for all the essential points of all levels. Then you have the specifics more of the sadhana bhakti. So then first with the vaidhi and the 64 items, then the rag bhakti, then bhava bhakti, and then prema bhakti. So that's all explained in the Eastern Ocean. So then in the Southern Ocean, then it gets into the description of, you know, what causes the attraction to Krishna. And so Krishna's 64 qualities are described. So we can see it's the qualities that attract people. People like the qualities of something. You're looking for something, you go to the market, you're looking for the qualities of it, whatever the qualities may be, but you're looking for it. It looks nice, or it's comfortable, or it's smooth, or it's refined, you know, or it's practical, or it's, you know, value for money. Something, you're looking for qualities. That's all anyone ever looks for. Means we may attribute, no, we're looking for things. But if the things don't have the qualities you want in them, they're not important. You only notice, if you look around, you're driving down the road and that, you only are going to notice things that are of value to you. Either in the positive, I mean, generally we're looking for the positive, but also the negative. Oh, this place is dirty, I don't like it. Or it's too busy, I don't like it. You know, or something like this. But the point is it's you're looking for qualities, because that's what the jiva expands from the sat potency. I mean, the chit potency. So the chit is, not, you know, the knowledge potency, but that's also where the qualities lie. Because to perform an action, you need to have qualification, right? This idea is that, no, I understand the mechanics, I can do it. That's not enough. You have to have the qualities. That's why Krishna says guna and karma. If you just go by karma, yes, I can do it, but that doesn't matter. People are interested in it being done with quality. Like I think it was Beethoven made a point. He says, It's a minor fault if someone makes a mistake in playing music that they hit a wrong note. But it's inexcusable when they don't have feeling when they're playing the music. They're just playing it mechanically. Right? So then that's the whole point. People look for the experience, and the experience comes from qualities. Qualities are the things that we're looking for, the qualities in the situation. We're looking for the qualities in the performance of the work. We're looking for the qualities in the result of that work. That's all we ever look for. We don't actually look for anything else. We may think, but I want this specific thing like this. I'm not looking for the qualities, but you're looking for, if you look at, well, what are those specifics you're looking for? Then you'll see they'll just mention qualities. So there is no such things. Just like they'll say, oh, Brahman, it has no qualities. But what is Brahman? Oh, it's unlimited. It's all knowledge. It's the absolute. They're just mentioning qualities. So the jivas cannot, the living entities cannot function other than qualities, because that's what Krishna is. The Brahman effulgence is the effulgence of his qualities. Right? Ananda is the happiness that is there in the in the static aspect of just the having those qualities, being in the existence of those qualities. And the dynamic is then the relationship between Krishna and the devotees and that interaction. Right? So then the qualities that come up there, that then gives the higher level, the Hladini Ananda, rather than just the Sat or the Chit level of satisfaction. So the living entities only function by looking for qualities, you know, looking for qualities in a situation, working with the qualities they have in context of that situation, and getting results that have qualities that they're looking for. So in devotion, it means you're doing all that. Well, this situation has these qualities. Okay, so which of these would be appropriate to use for Krishna, right? And then what action do I have, qualities that I have, are then qualify me to work with this situation? Because maybe this situation has nice opportunities for Krishna, but I'm not qualified. Like it's time for the Artik. But let's say there's an uninitiated devotee sitting in the temple room and notice it's time for Artik, but the Bajari hasn't shown up. So he doesn't just go, well, the Artik has to be done, and he jumps on the altar and does it. No, he goes and looks for where are the Pujaris. And then they go, oh, it's that, you know, and then they rush down into the Artik. Right? So the point is you have to have qualification. It's not just enough, I could do it, right? It means anybody could take a handful of incense and go like this. Right? I guarantee it. You could train a chimpanzee or a orangutan could do that also, right? It's not a big deal. But the point is one has the qualifications, and that is, those qualifications are done with devotion. That's what's the important thing. It's not just, oh, the karma, yes, I can do this, you know, like that. So, okay, so all you new people, you've all joined here, you know, and come and like that. It's very nice. We now have a very serious test. I want you all to line up here. Okay, yeah, like that. No, step back a little bit. Okay, yeah. Now, everybody raise their right hand to kind of a middle thing, not completely straight, a little bit bent like this. Okay, yeah, yeah. No, that's a little too stiff like that. No, that's too loose. So that, straighten it out a little bit. Okay, everyone's got it? Okay, now I want to see, can you make clockwise circles and continue that for some time? Okay, everyone on 3, 2, 1, okay. Okay, yeah, yeah, okay, like that, yeah, yeah, okay, that's good, like that. A little bit too big, there. No, that's too small, like that, you know, a little bit bigger, okay, like that, okay, yeah, okay, okay, great, okay. Second initiation tomorrow for you all, yes, okay, great, you know, Pujaris, yeah, Haribol, yeah, that's not how it works. Because it's not the mechanics, that's the mistake of the modern culture, is that they foolishly think it's the mechanics that make everything work fabulous. Oh, if we work this out so nice, or we have this situation, or like these, that they simply are taking on the physical and mechanical elements, but it's the qualities that matter. Just like the doctor, yeah, he knows all the medicine and all that, but his quality is, he's just a materialist. He's only interested in the money. So he's actually a businessman. He just trades his abilities in medicine for money and for good money. So people don't really appreciate that. They need the medicine, they go, they deal, they pay the money, but they don't actually respect them as doctors, as what you expect from the quality of a relationship with a doctor. Yeah, they can do doctor stuff, but you wouldn't want to have a, you wouldn't develop a relationship with them because they're a businessman, right? So that's the whole point, is that one has to see is that the qualities aren't there. If it's just about authority and about profit and facility and all things, then these aren't the qualities that you look for in any kind of relationship or, you know, in leadership. So the whole point is that it's a mistake by putting in the corporate this way. And the fun part is the people that actually encourage it behind the scenes, put in the money for this mentality to be cultivated, actually do worry about relationships and that. They only know that people are stupid, right? There was a, I don't know who said it, but it came up in, I think around the 1920s or something like that, 1920s, 1930s, that Americans saying there's a sucker born every minute, means there's an idiot born any minute that you can do anything you want, get them to do anything you want from them and take their money from them. You know, and so it's a standard business quotation. And those who are in it and know how to work it, they know that's the way it is. People are idiots. They can just take their money. So that's the whole point. That's not leadership. That's not actual management. Right? So the whole point is that you have to see is that it's the quality. So therefore, for Krishna, he comes because of the interaction with the devotees. That's all Krishna cares about. Killing the demons, they're going to die anyway. And two, how much does that take? Right? I mean, life is very fragile. The example is given of like water on a drop of water on a lotus leaf. It sits there in a ball. You know, you put water on a table or on the floor, it's like a half circle. Right? It's got on the bottom. And it doesn't move. You'd really have to move the thing to get the water to move because the water tension. But on a lotus leaf, there's no water tension. It's a little ball. And as soon as there's any movement, it just rolls around. You can see it as the water moves, the ball just rolls around on the lotus leaf. There's no surface tension. So that's actually life. Anything can kill you, right? Your body can just give up. You know, you walk out into the street, there's plenty of people who could run you over, right? Bicycle could run you over, the motorcycle could run you over, the car could run you over, the bus can run you over, the truck could run you over. And if you're not careful, even the old lady on the walker could knock you over, you know? So, you know, it's like that. So the Adi Atmak, Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivik, they're all there ready to give you trouble. So that's not the important thing. Krishna's material energy will take care of all those demons, right? By some form or another, then they're all going to be gone. But the important thing of Krishna coming is to show his wonderful qualities by which we can become attracted, right? So that's the main thing, that attraction to Krishna. That's the reason he comes, because he wants to interact with the living entities based on affection. And so he comes and affectionately shows his qualities so that everyone can see, because he's beyond the material. We can't perceive him with our senses in that. But even though everything is him and he's pervading everything, we don't see him. So when he comes personally as Bhagavan and performs his pastime so that it can be appreciated, then that's because of his affection, right? Because he's doing that through his internal potency. Right? And the internal potency then is his pleasure potency. So he's doing it out of affection. That's the point being made here. So he that's why he comes, you know, removes difficulties for the devotees and makes, you know, favorable situations for devotional service and association of devotees and all these kind of things. But it's based on affection. So one could ask, but okay, from this, then naturally the question may come up. Okay, then the devotees are serving, but so many things happen to them that's not nice and this and that and all that. I think that was, you know, one of the prominent discussions of last week's, you know, interactions, that so many, you know, how you say, why do bad things happen to good people, right? That's the phrase, right? And so we see here is that, but the point is that that means us, we're not understanding the level that Krishna's coming and interacting at, right? Because we're saying here, yes, see, Krishna's would naturally, if he comes, he would make a nice situation and make it nice for the devotees. But that making it nice for the devotees is for the devotees and their interaction and service to the Lord. But when we talk about that it's a nice situation, we have to be careful and see, you know, in our own mind, when we say, "Is you know, I'm having so much trouble, Krishna should take it away." Why? Right? Are we thinking because then it'll be more comfortable and I won't be disturbed? That's liberation. Or I'll have better facilities and all that. It won't be such a difficult time. That will be karma. Right? But as pointed out by Kunti Devi, he comes to do these things to create an environment for bhakti, the exchange between Krishna and the devotees. So now if it's a matter of these things are difficult, it makes it hard to serve, by them going away, then you can serve. That's the nice thing. But if it's just a matter of our own comfort, then we see it has that element of karma jnana. Because we see as Kunti Devi's praying for those situations where everything wasn't so ideal, because then they were absorbed in thinking of Krishna. And now when she's saying these prayers and making that point, they're already again the emperors of the world, right? That means all of their enemies have been killed. And I mean, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of enemies. You know, how many do we have, right? You know, even if you take all the mosquitoes in Mayapur, you still don't get hundreds of millions. Right, so the element that's there is that's not what she's talking about. She already has that emperor of the world, unrivaled, which Yudhishthir will be at this time. Before, when he was technically the Yuvaraj to be the emperor, he had rivals. Right, in other words, Duryodhana. He didn't technically have, but Duryodhana decided to make himself and his father to make rivals. And so that's not that position that they had, that's not the happiness that then the Upanishad then explains. Upanishad explains that a full unit of human happiness is being emperor of the world unrivaled. And that is as good as it gets. It doesn't materially get any better than that for a human. That's the top you can get, right? And you take that, and that's in the Upanishad taken as one unit, right? Just to make a comparison. Then you have, you know, those guys in the Antariksha, you know, ouch, oh man. They are 100 times that. You know, it means all those ones that fight, you know, all the Gandharvas and all those, that big, 100 times that. Right, and then the demigods that are on the, you know, just the general demigods on the heavenly planet, they're 100 times that. Then the heads of the, you know, the positions, the you know, universal bureaucracy, they're 100 times that. You know, headed by, you could say the Dikpalas, you know, the eight demigods and the eight directions that could all, you know, Indra and Varuna, Agni, Vayu, Yama, let's see, who's over that side? Niriti, like this. So you have the eight around, the main ones. They're 100 times, and Indra's 100 times that, right? Then Brahma is 100 times, no, then the Prajapatis are 100 times that. Brahma's 100 times that. Then that is just considered a drop compared to what it is of the happiness of Brahman, of not being connected with the material position at all, right? Then that ocean is considered a fraction of a portion of a drop of the unlimited, shoreless ocean of bhakti. I mean, the other, they're just saying an ocean. That means an ocean, you know, whatever you want, Pacific, Atlantic, you know, whichever you want. And it's got shores. It's big, but it's only so big. So the Brahmananda is only so big. But bhakti, it's unlimited. It's always getting bigger and bigger. And it's all ever expanding. So we can see is she's talking from the position of happiness that no one, you know, very rare you see. Bhagavatam lists the line of the kings and that they were emperors of the earth. Not, they're the ones that have that position. And you see in that position, they're interested in bhakti. Kunti Devi's in that position. She's interested in bhakti. And that's the main thing. So she says, you know, we have more option to remember Krishna and think about Krishna when there were troubles. So she's saying, you know, about it was better when it was worse. Right? That's her point. So this thing is that no, but if bhakti is going, devotional service going nicely as a religion, then I don't have any material problems. But the point is that's the negative. I just got rid of my problems. Where's the positive? So Krishna comes to establish the positive. The negative just happens anyway. Right? You get the if you get something to eat, you're not hungry. But if all you, I just want to get rid of this hunger, that's all I'm thinking about, then it doesn't give you opportunity for appreciating some nice arrangement of prasad with the devotees and interact, because that's positive. It's a dynamic service. But I just want to get rid of the hunger. That'll just be removing the negative. So we see here, Kunti's pointing out is that absorption in Krishna, that's the real positive. And then the external of the material world, that's not a positive. That's just, you know, sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. The variety makes all these different things. Does this make some difference here? In other words, Krishna as Brahman and Paramatma get rid of the demons, right? And correct what's in you know, irreligious, because Paramatma is in control of all the laws of nature, that everything functions how it should function, right? It functions how it should function. And so therefore that's that, you know, him as God, that's where he's controlling all that, right? So that aspect is there. So then, but the point is he's come to show his good qualities. That's Bhagavan. That's beyond these elements of karma and jnana. Beyond just his majesty in these things. This is his quality, even though the majesty will be qualities for those who are interested in that. But that's the point that he comes. And so that's where we have to have the focus. Otherwise, we look too much just at the religious aspect and not at the transcendental. Right? We look too much at, you know, Brahman and Paramatma, that if I'm doing my religious work, I'm following the laws, I should have good material facilities. And with minimal disturbance, you know, or even better, no disturbance. But the point is bhakti means, no, it's about the interaction with God. And if that's there, then that's wonderful, right? Now, someone might say, oh, but, you know, then you're talking about there might be, you know, ups and downs and this and that. We just want things, you know, peaceful and steady and all that. And then we say, do we? Do we actually? Is that how we function? Right now, think about it. If you, let's say somebody wants to relax, just do nothing, right? And so they may try to watch some kind of entertainment that has some kind of, you know, not necessarily an intellectual or a particular religious or some other significant educational kind of element to it, just people interacting, right? You know, just people doing something together, right? But in that, then we're looking at, you know, that, and if everything is just going smoothly, nothing's ever going wrong, we will not watch that education again. We're looking for, oh, something goes wrong, and then they have to fix it, and then there's a goal, and they're working hard, going over all the obstacles, like that. So, Even if there's nothing wrong, we will create a bad atmosphere just so that there's the opportunity that it could switch from bad to good. Say what you want. But if you look at the statistics, you know, that's what goes on. Right? Even we see Bharat Muni's pointing out that in drama, right? Because you have a drama. So in the Vedic drama, you have music, dance, and acting also, all three together. So it's not just one or the other. It's all three that together, you know, that performing drama. So in that, the whole point is to elevate the consciousness, right? But in the unfolding of the plot of the drama, then there has to be the element where the hero and heroine somehow or another get connected. But then an obstacle comes up where they're not, right? And then you spend so much of the time then trying to work out all those obstacles and all that. And then there comes the point where the hero can see is, yes, I can conquer over this and make everything all right. So there's that moment, okay, there's hope, it can work. And then finally it does work out, and then the hero and heroine together again. Right? And then you have your subplots, you know, with the guy and his hamster, and his hamster, you know, fell into the bucket, and, you know, stuff like that. And so you have to, you know, take care of all these things on the side. But the main plot is going in that way, so there's always a problem. Right? If the hamster just sits there and goes, wee, 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 and the whole time, you know, you can put it in once or twice here and there, but you can't make that a main thing. But the hamster falls into the bucket. Now we have something to deal with. You understand? So now the different, and we're doing that because we want to get away from just the overbearing pressure and responsibility of working with the material energy. I just want to relax. And this is what we put ourselves into. So the point is it has to be, it is something that works out, right? Then it elevates the consciousness. But only if it's about Krishna, then it elevates the consciousness up to that higher position, right? So that's the difference. On the material platform, we're going to do that anyway. Now, the question is how far do we want to take that? Is that Radha and Krishna getting together? You know, does that make sense? Or Krishna and his pastimes and overcoming all these things, marrying the queens, or some other thing with the devotees, you know, like that, you know, overcoming all the difficulties that came up from I think when Satrajit was killed, you know, and the shaman Taka Jewel, you know, and overcoming all those things. But they're all connected with Krishna. And in that, you see all his nice qualities and how he uses them, the various situations with the various devotees. You know, otherwise, we're just looking at some mundane guys there. And, you know, the particular qualities they have, there's a more kind of hero-y kind of guy that has some better qualities. And there's his, you know, sidekick that's also very nice, or, you know, a little bit, you know, not quite together. Then there's the guy who's just kind of, you know, the buffoon, you know, like that. All the jokes come up about him. He's always doing something stupid, you know, and other things like that. And then you're going to have the, you know, the villain, you know, who's making all the trouble. And, you know, so all these things you're going to have. So it's just a matter of, the question is we're going to do that anyway. Now it's just a matter, is it about Krishna or not? That's the difference. Now you do it on the material platform, it can only go up to a certain amount. But that same position then taken in context of Krishna, then that goes into the unlimited. It has no ending how far, how much happiness can be gained. So it's just a matter of understanding what we're doing is we're dealing with Krishna's energies and Krishna's, transformative abilities, but not use and getting results, but not about Krishna. So bhakti means when you take the situation, the action, and the result and see that all in context of Krishna and therefore act in that way to get a result for Krishna, that's then what we'll call bhakti, right? So it's very significant what she's saying. It goes beyond, because she's asking for the troubles because they're always remembering Krishna. So the situation, what they're doing isn't the main thing. You know, we'll take it as that's the main thing, because that's what we've been doing since time immemorial in the material world, is just in situations trying to do something to make ourselves happy. And it's never worked since time immemorial, neither for us or any other living entity. Right? Never. So that the whole point is Krishna comes to show this is where you can get happiness. This is actually where you can find that satisfaction. That, yeah, good. Any questions on that or anything? No? Okay, so then continue reading, please.
We are very eager to learn about him and his incarnations.
Wow. Okay, yes. Question.
Yes, Maharaj, Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances. There can be some argumentation that the jiva is generally based on the happiness, and why we have to, for example, look for some unhappiness or tapasya, when it's generally, it can be understood that it's again the nature of the jiva. Many times there is the argument like this, then how to understand, how to preach in such condition?
Well, because they only took the happiness part. What happened to the existence and the work and qualification part? Right? So in other words, we're getting our happiness from within a particular situation, applying our qualification to action in that situation and getting a result. So you have to take all three. You can't just take one, right? Just like, let's say, the Mayavadis, they only take one, you know, that the existence of the jiva, right? So that's why it's not complete. Or Paramatma, they may take existence and knowledge. It's still not complete. So therefore, you're either going to move forward to, you know, Anandamaya, where it's devotion to the Lord, where you include the Bhagavan element, or you'll move back to the impersonal. Like you see, even in you know, contemporary context, and much of the time in the world religions, then they all talk about God as a person and are having a personal relationship. And then you say, well, you know, so what are these qualifications of God, you know, like this and that? Then they'll go, oh, he has no form. He has no, you know, they just, so that's the thing, is you either go forward into that personal bhakti, or they'll move back into impersonalism. Right? So it's just a matter, you have to make that choice. So it just taking, and you can't, and if you're going to take Ananda, but how did that Ananda happen? That Ananda happened by results from an action in a situation. So if, when you see all situations connected to Krishna, all action connected to Krishna, all results connected to Krishna, then you will be Anandamaya Vyasa. Right? Then if not, then there's going to be the problem. So the point is all those three are always going on. Now the point is if you see it in connection with Krishna, it actually gives you Ananda. And if not, then it's just the material happiness, because material happiness means removing a pain. So if you have an attachment, this is the fun part of just the definition of, you know, we say material happiness means pain. We'll say, no, it means happiness, but happiness in the material world is removal of a pain. So if I want to be happy, I have to have the pain to remove. Like if I decide, oh, I want a car, then now I have the pain of I don't have a car. Right? And I have to work through all the different things to either, you know, have the money, or, you know, go down and get the papers to get it, you know, find which car, because there's so many cars and all that, and this and that. And then where am I going to keep the car, and how am I going to maintain the car, and all the, and when I work all that out, and now I have the car, there's that moment that I call happiness, when I worked out all the problems. And as soon as I do that, you know, that moment's happy. But now the next moment is, well, now we need petrol. So now I have a pain again. Oh, there's no petrol. I have to get petrol. Where's the petrol station? I go there. There's 20 cars in the line. Okay, I got to drive to the next one. You know, am I going to have enough petrol to get to the next one? Then I finally get there and all that, you know, and then, you know. So those are the things, is that It's always going through those three. The difference is when it's in relationship to Krishna, all three give happiness. Right? All three stages. Because the situation is you see it connected to Krishna, so you're remembering Krishna, you're happy. Then there's an action to perform in that situation that creates even more happiness. And then when you get that result for Krishna and Krishna is pleased, you get the maximum happiness. You know, so just like in Sat Chit and Ananda, there's existence. There's existence itself, existence of situations that I can do things and make results. And there's existence of results and experience of those. I experience that it's a real existence. But the Chit and Ananda, it's that they have existence, but the point is the existence, you just look at the existence part, right? Then in knowledge, then the point is in the situation, there's all the opportunities of knowledge about the situation. What are the rules governing it and everything? What can be done? What can be combined and everything like that? But it's only the situation, right? Then when I actually can, and I have the qualification to do it, I actually can combine them, right? Then I get results. But I mean, the existence is there. Now I'm adding the knowledge, then I'm getting that happiness. Now, happiness means you have, in a situation, performed an action that got the result that gave the happiness. So you see, as Sat Chit Ananda, they're all one thing, just three features of one thing. So that means the existence pervades the whole thing, the knowledge pervades the whole thing, and the Ananda pervades the whole thing. But when you're just looking at existence, the amount of, you know, the knowledge or happiness will be lesser when you're looking at the chit part. Then, you know, that'll be the prominent one, and the other two will be, and when you get there, then Ananda's the main. So all three are in each one of them, but it's just the prominent, so we call it by that name. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Summary, then we can understand that in the material world there is only problem, but we are looking like happiness, smaller problem than the biggest one. And that transcendental platform, generally everything, because it's connected with Krishna, bring the happiness. And it have to be understood like this, that real happiness means connection with the spiritual, with the Krishna. And
yes. Yes, also in there, the another aspect that could come up, or, you know, a doubt that could come up is, you know, but see, sometimes individuals think, oh, the comparison is too close, and because I'm miserable here with all this variety and action and situations, it's possible I could be miserable there, right? But the difference is, as we see from Brahma Samhita, then in the spiritual world, there's no time, right? Time is serving the pastimes. Time doesn't control the pastimes. In the material world, time controls everything. So there's a past, there's a present, and there's a future. So once the past goes, it's gone, and the future is not here. So all you have is the present you can work in. So then that means that something you get, then it loses. Everything, you get some happiness, then it goes off. Then you look for the next problem so you can solve that to get more happiness, and then that drops off. And it's just constant. So we get tired from the work. But in spiritual world, because you don't have the time factor doing that, there's no past or present, future, there's only the present. Then the point is that happiness that you got from a previous action in serving Krishna, that's still here today, and it will be there eternally. It never ends because there's no time factor that makes it past. So that means if I got whatever happiness I got yesterday, it's still there today. Then whatever I do today adds happiness to that. That's still there tomorrow. Now I have these 2 days of happiness. The third, it just keeps going eternally. So it just gets, that's why it says a shoreless ocean, because the happiness gets more and more and more, right? So that's a feature that's there. While here, because of time factor controlling, then whatever happiness and whatever you've gained and whatever situations and problems you've worked out, That's the past. And now in the present, it changes. Well, in the spiritual world, the variety there, this, you know, then is simply creating nicer environments, you know, variety of environments to serve Krishna. While here it's creating opportunity for variety of obstacles to overcome that we supposedly can get happiness. Is that?
Yes, Maharaj, it's clear. Thank you very much.
Yes, yes. Okay, very good. Good. Any other question or? Okay, so then we'll try. We'll continue, please.
We are very eager to learn about him and his incarnations. And so please narrate to us the wonderful transcendental pastimes that he performs, for one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, even unconsciously, one can immediately be delivered from the entanglement of birth and death.
Yeah, 1 second there. That point there, that's an important point. So just the happiness comes from hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord, right? The glories are his qualities. So those qualities, name, the form, the qualities, pastimes, the paraphernalia, the associates, the dham, like this. So that's where the real happiness comes, right? That's the positive. But we see there, even if the holy name is chanted, even unconsciously, it removes the material problems, right? So in other words, removing all the material problems, you know, that are there, meaning in the way of karma and jnana or sin or whatever it is that we're, however we want to identify, that can be done by chanting the holy name unconsciously. Right, so we have to appreciate that the name of Krishna is absolute, and when we say it's absolute, it means it does not depend upon us to make it work. Right, because generally in this point, if we say like Haridas Thakur made the point, one chanting of the name in Nama Bas can give you liberation. Shall I repeat that? One chanting the holy name in Nama Bas. That means not pure chanting. Nama Bas, that's the shadow. That means it's like the in the morning you start to see light, but the sun hasn't come up. You don't see the sun, but there's already light. That's Nama Bas. Right? So the devotee who has faith in the form of the Lord and faith in devotional service, or even just faith in the form of the Lord, then that's the position where that's, you know, one would be chanting on the platform of Nama Bas. Right? And so by that chanting, one is liberated. Well, Gopal Chapala didn't appreciate that because, you know, getting liberated is such a big thing. Material world is so big and important, and sin is such a big thing like this. And so therefore, for this liberation of time, it's a very big thing. So how could just one chanting of Nama Bas, you know, or when the person is not even conscious, how could it do such a great and important and wonderful thing? Because the material world is so goddamn important to me. And I have so much faith in it. And it's so important that whatever is done here is real. How could something as esoteric and subtle and, you know, far away as the holy name, just one chanting, get rid of all that? And this mentality is actually the basis for so much of our problems. Because we're looking at removing sin or becoming liberated as the real thing, substantial, main, you know, substance. It's the what we're really looking at, you know. But it's actually, no, you know, it's like, the fiber is the most important thing. No, it's all the vitamins and minerals and everything else that comes along with what you eat. The fiber just makes it so everything moves through. Right? There's no nutritional value to fiber. Fiber just makes your system move properly. Does that make sense? So we get so overwhelmed that this is so important. That, you know, somebody's done something, it can't be overcome. And oh, it's like that, the holy name, you know, even the power of the holy name can't save you. I mean, I've heard devotees telling me They've been told by devotees this point. So this is the whole point that's being made here. It's killing the demons and removing the sin and all. That's not the main reason Krishna comes. That's the easy part. That's a side part. Just like if I order, get some food, the plate comes along with it. I don't have to keep asking, am I going to get a plate? You know, hey, you know, are you going to bring a plate with it? You know, hey, when I this thing on the menu here, does that come with a plate? You know, no. Plate comes anyway. It's about the food. So it's about the relationship with Krishna and how he comes to interact with the devotees. That's the real substance. And these other things happen anyway. So that's the whole point, is that all the sin is gone. Your karma is gone when you develop faith in Krishna as a person that he has an eternal form. Your karma is gone. You know, it's finished. But, oh, no, but I'm here. I'm still suffering. How can you say that? It's some thing. How can such an insignificant thing as chanting the holy name do that? Because that's the secondary thing. The real thing is developing love for Krishna. That's the significance. So just by the holy name and Nama Bas, that will get you the liberation. What the Mayavadis and all these great sages worked so hard and so much tapasya and austerity to do, and meditation to do, the new bhakti has already gotten that by chanting the holy name. That's it. No, but why am I still here? I'm still suffering in this. So again, still liberation. Again, still karma. Right? So that's why you have to look at it from the lens of pure devotion. Is that that why aren't we? We're in a situation of, means it's just like this. If we can be in a spiritual situation and give up thinking about Krishna and come to the material world, we're putting too much on the situation. That situation is in control. Because we like to say, oh, I'm controlled by this situation, right? That's the popular thing. Why do we want to do that? Because if I'm controlled by that situation, it's not my fault. That things didn't work out, it's not me. It's the situation. It's everybody else. It's all these different things. I'm great. I'm fabulous. I'm fantastic. And if anything went wrong, it's got to be someone else's fault because I am faultless. I am perfect. I am fantastic. That's why the first point, you know, in devotional service is humility. The first quality of knowledge is humility. All these other, the other 19 points that Krishna made, if you're humble, these can manifest. But if you're not humble, you're not really going to see them. They may be there temporarily and come up and down, but it's humility because I am the soul. I'm 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. How big is that? Right? And so I am servant of Krishna. That's the main thing. And so if that's there, then it's a matter of the positive is I want to serve Krishna. So now we're in the material world. You can be in the material world and be 100% absorbed in Krishna and be a pure devotee, right? We'll acknowledge that. But that means devotional service is not dependent on the situation, right? The jiva, by his conditioning, is affected by the situations. That's why we always strive to create situations that are more favorable for devotional service so that we won't be distracted. Right? You know, you see the picture of Prahlad Maharaj and he's there with the snakes. They're not bothering him. You know, or I saw one painting where he's there dancing and everything, you know, doing kirtan, remembering Krishna and dancing and all that. And the snakes are all around him. They don't know what's going on. Right? So the point is we take it that the situation is in control. No, that's not how it is. It's your consciousness. What you do, a situation is just, I can extend my consciousness into this situation. Now, what do I do with it? That's your choice. Then if I act on those choices, that's my choice. They'll say, oh, no, it's just, I couldn't do anything else. Couldn't do anything else because you have a certain goal. But you always have choice. Right? You always have choice. So then that becomes the point. Oh, that's so difficult. And then, you know, that's it. So now what it comes down to then, what's the point is that Therefore, your karma is gone. So that's not your problem. We're taking, no, it's around us. That's what's all my problem. Why I'm not advancing in devotion. You're not advancing because your heart is impure. The mind is not clean. That's not the karma. That's your cultivated mundane consciousness. So you have to want to clear that. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just like, let's say we have, you know, let's say a kid, and they're a bit rambunctious kid. So they're going to do, run around, you know, things get knocked over, things get broken, this and that, right? That's his choice. He did that in that situation. Now you can say is, oh, now, you know, it's like that. No, he's controlled by his environment and all that. That's what you want to say. That's the whole modern kind of political position. Everyone's controlled by the situation. There's nothing he can do about it. He could sit down nicely and do his homework. That's what his parents told him to do anyway. But he decided to run around and play baseball in the house and, you know, broke a few things like that, you know. So now you can come and the parents come home and they can clean up the mess, right? Now the situation's what it was before. But now is his rambunctious nature gone? Just because I picked up and swept up all the broken glass from the vase and, you know, and stuff like that. You know, is that, you know, does that make sense? He left the refrigerator open and the dog went in there and went to town, you know, and all that. You can clean all that up, but he's still a very restless child. So that's the whole point. The holy name can come in and by one chanting, then remove all the karma and all the sin is what's there since time immemorial. But you still have that the living entity thinks, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And, you know, how you say, and everybody should understand that. You understand? That's what has to go away. So remember, you know, we had some time back that discussion on, I'm doing service and it says that, you know, the holy name, all sin's gone. Why do I have bad situations? Because you still have a bad mentality. Like, what broke everything in the house? The house itself? Or the kid's mentality? Because of the mentality, he did action that broke things in the house. So if you get clean it up, clean slate. But if we haven't changed the mentality, that's it. That's why it says devotional service is the most powerful, because it can correct the mentality. No other process, we'll repeat, no other process, karma, jnana, yoga, you know, being a nice guy, you know, social ideologies, whatever it is you have, none of them can correct the mentality, the consciousness. They can't correct the impressions that are there. They can't correct the, you know, the opera, Parabdha, aparabdha karma. They can't deal with the seeds of desire. They can deal with karma itself and remove a little bit something here and there, but they can't actually correct it. Only devotional service can do that. Right? That's the point that's there. So therefore, as long as we're attached to I'm the controller and enjoyer, of course things are going to go wrong because you constantly do nonsense that makes things go wrong. Right? You can say, no, but I'm a good person. I'm a nice person. But how are you defining good and nice? Does it depend on good means Prahlad Maharaj is good. Always absorbed in Krishna no matter what the situation. Yudhishthir is good. Right? But all living entities by nature are good. They're all, you know, pure Satchitananda. There's effulgent as the sun. They're, you know, they're never actually conditioned. Only their consciousness, maybe they that, but they're always in a liberated state. But they accept the covering that's there, so then they get distracted. So that becomes the The point is that because the mentality is still mundane or has mundane, you know, elements to it, right? So much has been corrected. Oh, but it's been 30 years and this and that. And yeah, and so much has been corrected, but there's still something less. When we're on the platform of pure devotion, then there won't be nothing left to get in the way, right? Because on that side, there's nothing negative left. But the point is you still have to develop the positive. You still have to develop the cultivate that I want to serve Krishna, right? I want to serve Krishna. So, you know, I could be going to Mangalarti because I'm supposed to, and that's good. That's sadhana bhakti. By intelligence, I do it. That's why in Gita, Krishna says it's buddhi yoga. You use your intelligence to know I should do this. But with time, then rag bhakti means I want to go to Mangalarti. I like going and seeing Krishna first thing in the morning and singing to him and being with the devotees and doing service. That's then the positive we're trying to do. So therefore, we use intelligence to just make a regulated action that it brings us to that point where we actually like to do it. And then you don't require the regulation. You're going to do it anyway. Right? So that's then the point is that we see is here is that even unconsciously we'll get rid of chanting, we'll get rid of all the sin. But it's consciously that we become attached to Krishna, right? Because we become attracted by his good qualities. So two things are going on here. But the main is always remembering. And then the side thing is never forgetting. Right? So the more we're conditioned, the more there is the elements of putting in things in place so that we don't forget. Right? You know, it's like in the beginning, there is no concept of you know, the Vedic or, you know, that devotional life and all that. So if people didn't move into the temple, basically they didn't make it in devotional service. So we see, especially there in the 60s and you know, probably, you know, early to mid 70s, then if you didn't live in a temple, you generally didn't do very well. Right? There was a few individuals here and there that might be too young to move into the temple or this or that, and they pushed through and then they eventually moved into the temple. But as you have the concept that, you know, you can have a devotional life, you know, wherever you are, then the community comes up as something that is an extension of the temple. Right? Because you have the temple as the center, Krishna is the center, and then the community extends around that. If you say no, the community is the center, then one doesn't actually is not understanding. That's probably based on some ideology. If someone says no, it's the community the center, it's all about the devotees, but who's the center of the devotees' life? Krishna. So therefore the temple is the center. But maybe not institutionally it's a center. It's Krishna himself, the person is the center, and we as a member of the community, as in a relationship with Krishna, the person, that's the central point. But you have to bring that out. Otherwise, then it just becomes a political, you know, thing of who has more power, the temple, the community, and who, and then, you know, who in the temple, who in the community, you know, and what's, you know, who has more in this and that. You know, then it just becomes a waste of time. This is then the meaning of cleaning the mirror of the mind, right? Because when the mirror is clean, then you see everything. Right? You can reflect all those nice qualities of Krishna because we're just part and parcel of Krishna. Right? So the mirror can reflect greater volume of qualities than it has. So the soul, when the mind is clean, can reflect all those wonderful qualities coming from Krishna and the Vaishnavas. And then that way, then they can experience a position of, you know, the existential position and the elements of, right, this is a problem. And of qualities greater than themselves. The soul has qualities, but they're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Krishna is unlimited. His internal potency, you know, the Sarup Shakti is unlimited. Then the expansion of the Sarup Shakti, then they'll have great, you know, position and volume and all that, and we have small. But if we're in touch with, then we take on the qualities like iron and fire. Even though it's iron, it takes on the qualities of fire. So when the mirror is completely clean, that you can reflect the wonderful qualities of Krishna and the devotees and their loving pastimes, then one can experience, take part in that experience of their wonderful unlimited pastimes. Yes? No? Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. So that explains more of what's before, because there's no, I chanted and it's all gone, so nothing should be going wrong. The point is the spiritual world, then nothing goes wrong because people are always absorbed in Krishna. But it doesn't mean the situations around them or the services they're going to perform don't adjust. So sometimes it doesn't work out. Like you have Krishna goes to, you know, to he sneaks into the court, Jatila's courtyard, and there's a big tree in the courtyard. And he climbs up that tree, because if he gets up to the top of the tree, he can talk to Radharani in her window because her room is up there. Right? But it's summertime and it's very hot, right? So then you don't sleep indoors, you sleep in the courtyard. So as he's climbing up the tree, then Jatila and everybody are coming out and setting up camp in the courtyard. Right? So the situation changes. Right? So now Krishna can't come down from the tree. So he has to stay in the tree all night until they get up in the morning and go inside to take their bath. Then he can come down and sneak away and go back. Right? But the whole point is he's still going to be absorbed in remembering Srimati Radharani, and she's going to be absorbed in him. He knows she's there, he's here, and so then it'll have an intensity and all that. It will be, you know, great transcendental ecstasy. But situations change. That's the point. And we then see what we can do as service in those situations. So this whole point that we're dependent upon the situation, that's just one, it's good for our false ego, because then it's never our fault. And two, that way then we can support whoever we like, because we can say, what can they do? They're controlled by the situation. And people we don't like, we say they are the situation. It's a political platform like that. That's very commonly used nowadays, right? You know, as it's said, you're either in the camp of the hero or in the camp of the villain. There's nothing in between. That's the modern way of thinking. Everything's black and white. So it's a matter of no. It's a matter of there's Krishna, and there's the, you know, Krishna says there's one path. So there's Krishna, his pastimes and braj at one end, and there's, you know, the 26 hells at the other end of the road. And then you now, depending upon your consciousness, can be anywhere in between. And you can be going towards Krishna or away from Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's always on our choice how we use our qualities. And so when we're attracted by Krishna's qualities, then those being superior, we tend to want to bring our qualities in line with Krishna's qualities. So that's why it's so important to hear about, you know, Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Right? And as we hear, now the mind becomes purified. Now, because the point is, it's not the situation, it's how we view the situation. Is the situation good? Is it bad? Let's say it's middle of winter. You're sitting outside, trudging through the snow, your feet are freezing, your nose is freezing, your ears are freezing, your fingers are freezing, and you wish you were in a nice, warm, hot place. And if I said, hey, I could transfer you right now to the Bahamas, but unfortunately it's like 35 degrees there right now. Great, take me there. But then when we get there and we warm up, then we go, you know, we get there and go, oh, this place is fabulous. But once it warms up and now it gets hot and we start sweating, now you go, oh, now this is too hot. That was so nice there in the snow and everything. It wasn't, you know, like that. So this whole point is that's the situation that's the problem. No, it's the condition of our consciousness. That's the problem. Does that make sense? You know, that. So it doesn't mean that others aren't, by their lack of proper consciousness, aren't adding to the bad situation. Right? And they get the results of their impurity of their consciousness. But at the same time, as then if our mind is impure, then you know the situation bothers us more. And as we get more purified, it bothers us less. You know, it may be inconvenient, but you serve Krishna anyway, because that's the main thing. Yes, no?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, please, then continue.
Therefore, great devotees such as Narada always chant the holy name and sing about the glories of the Supreme Lord.
Yes. So you see, therefore, they're always hearing and chanting about the holy name, because if just by chanting unconsciously you can get so much benefit, just free from the material existence, how much more benefit are you getting by constantly chanting and being conscious? That make sense? Because we'll look at, oh, it removes this. Okay, remove that, it's done. Because what in the material world, what's happiness? Removing pain. So we're looking at that, this situation I'm in, if the bad things that I'm considering now as bad are removed, then it will be a good situation. But you call it a good situation. Someone else in the same situation would say that would be bad. You know, why would they say it's bad? Because there's a good chance that you and your view that to make the situation good, they're removed, right? And so they would consider that bad, you consider it good. So the feature of that we're conditioned by removing pain is pleasure, then we're still trying to judge Krishna consciousness on the religious platform that if I'm in a nice material situation, that's good. But it's actually, the real pain is forgetting Krishna. And so remembering Krishna always, that's the real happiness. Right? And if we can be Krishna conscious, whether it's nice or not nice, we can be in a nice situation, won't forget Krishna. And if we're in a not nice situation, we'll remember Krishna. Right? But if one's conditioned, then much of the time when we're in bad situations, then we can remember Krishna. And when we're in good situations, we forget. Because if you notice, when it's ever brought up that someone in law, has problem with his faith in Krishna consciousness, they're only quoting bad situations. They're never looking at how Krishna conscious was I when the situation was good. You know, it worked out at work. I got the new raise. We got more money, took the family on that holiday. We always wanted to go. We were doing this. We were doing that. How much did you remember Krishna? You know, and if, but we were just taking a break there, you know, so we weren't fanatic and everything. When we get back, we'll get serious. But Prahlad Maharaj, if it's nice or not nice, he's always remembering Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point, is it's nice, that's because Krishna's arranged it like that. And it's not nice, that's because that's the way it worked out. You know, consciousness needs to be purified. How do you do that? Right? If I want to take gold, now gold is valuable. Right? But if I have a gold nugget, how do I purify it? You know, do I take it and, you know, pat it on the head, and, oh, you're such a nice, wonderful piece of gold, and aren't you fantastic as a piece of gold, and give them a little trophy for, you know, just existing as a piece of gold, you know, oh, you're sitting here on my table and all that, you get the trophy for being, you know, on the table along with everything else award, you know, no, it's fire. So, that's just the way it goes. It means we decided to come here, so you know it's going to be a little bit of a trip. And the point is it can be done in a moment, literally. In a moment, you can fully surrender to Krishna. It can be done. We see Maharaj Katvanga, the gopis, you know, others. There are examples of devotees doing this in a moment. And there's those that takes a little bit more time. You know, so the point is. Then if we appreciate this, we understand this, and, you know, cultivate this, then we move forward very, very nicely. Thank God. Raghunath, you had something before?
Persons who come in contact with such pure devotees can immediately become sanctified, whereas bathing in the Ganga purifies one gradually. Footnote 7. The reasoning here is that one need only be in the proximity of sadhus to obtain their mercy, whereas the mercy of the Ganga is achieved through repeated bathing.
Because he says that sadhana elements and all those require that you're regularly always doing them. But association of the Vaishnavas, that has the most powerful. Just like that, same being in the proximity, you're not even directly interact with them. Like Srila Prabhupada be there, he'd be giving a class or being at a Rath Yatra. You might not even interact directly, but you'd be there, see him interacting. You know, you'd be in the kirtan and all that, and that whole environment, you'd become purified. So that's the advantage of all these things. What's great is that there's the association of devotees, and that's valued, right? That's what's so wonderful. So if that association is there, then things become very nice. It just needs the proximity. It doesn't mean you have to be right there interacting. You know, I have to do. No, it's just same with the deity. You go for the Abhishek, Janmashtami Abhishek, you're just sitting there, you watch. You're getting the same benefit as the devotees who are bathing because you're watching them bathe and seeing them interact with the deity. But the idea, no, unless I go up there and bathe personally myself, I won't get the benefit. That's not understanding the process. Then you're saying it's me that makes it potent rather than no, it's Krishna and his devotional process. You know, the deity, that's the Lord, the holy name, the association of Vaishnava, that's what makes it potency. We always tend to bring it back to ourselves. If I do it, then I get the benefit. And if someone else is doing it, I'm not getting the benefit that I know I could get. You know. So yeah. Okay. Please.
We never tire of hearing Krishna Katha. For those who have developed their transcendental relationship with the Lord, relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment. 12 to 16.
Yeah, here, just on that, is that you see those who have developed a relationship with Krishna, then they always want to, you know, tirelessly always hear about Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Now, here in this relationship, this means from I just understand I am the soul, I'm not this body, I'm part and parcel of Krishna, I'm servant of Krishna, and I want to, you know, cultivate that relationship with Krishna. That's a relationship with Krishna, right? It begins there, and it ends with, you know, in your spiritual form, being elevated to the platform of prema. So, starting with Shraddha, that's a relationship, and then, you know, and then you bring up to the point of prema, and then that's, you know, the most solid relationship. So that's the whole thing. So this idea that sahaja is, oh no, but unless you have that personal relationship, you know, in your sarup and everything like that, then you don't. No, that just is more and more, right? Otherwise, if that's the case, then how is Shantaras work? That somebody just appreciates and they don't necessarily even directly interact, right? It might, but they don't have to. So. These are just things, putting our own mundane thing of time and space on things that I have to be doing it because I make it happen and everything like that. When it's no, it's Krishna and his internal potency. They make it happen. We can take part. That's the point. Jivas can be instruments. They're not the controllers. They're not the enjoyers. They're instruments in assisting in the activities, you know, of the pastimes and in relishing the results of the pastimes. They can be an instrument. And when you put iron in fire, it's as good as fire. So we don't lose out. Yeah. Okay.
Srila Jiva Goswami comments to 1.1.14 in his Sri Krishna Sandarbha as follows. In this verse, the word vivasa means even though absorbed in thinking of other things. Because Sri Krishna is the origin of all incarnations of Godhead, all the holy names of God actually refer to him. This is confirmed in the Vishnu Purana, which states, Lord Krishna is the origin of all the holy names of God. For this reason, all the Lord's holy names, such as Vasudev, Damodar, Govinda, Keshava, and all other names of the Lord, should be understood as names of Sri Krishna. In this verse, the word Tata means from the cycle of birth and death. The chanter of Lord Krishna's holy name becomes free from the complicated meshes of birth and death, because even fear personified fears the holy name of the Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1.1.14-16, the phrase is Samshritam Goram, terrifying material life, Vivasha, helpless, and Sadhya, immediately, indicate persons like Ajamil. By the utterance of even one name of the Lord, fear at its very root, Swayambhayam, like Swayam Bhagavan, the form of Mahakala, causing destruction of the universe, becomes afraid. What then to speak of death and Yama in charge of death? And what to speak of having fear of lesser beings such as the servants of Yama?
Yeah. So here he's pointing out that it's not, first make sure is that it's not just only Krishna's name and no other names, all of his names. Then those will all give this effect. And just the ones that are primary, then they cultivate that aspect of love, of prema, and those that are his qualities of lordship and all that, then they'll bring about that position of just removal of all the impediments. Right? It means, all the impurities. So, and then the example here then is given of Ajamil. Now, he's just chanting his son's name. It is a name of Krishna. And he's chanting that name thinking that he's not criticizing a devotee. He's not thinking that, he's not comparing Krishna's name to that of Shiva or Shakti or Ganesh and saying it's equal. He's not going against the order of the spiritual master here. He's not thinking that the glory of this name is imagination or that, that it's equal to some karmakanda activity, or that he is, thinking that, I'm so sinful if I chant the holy name, like this and that. He's not preaching to anyone faithless like that. He's not conscious of a material attachment and maintaining it. He's just chanting his son's name out of just, thinking of that it's at a compromise point of death, and he just remembers what's very dear to him. So then, like the youngest son, is then dear. You understand? Because Nama Bas is not pure, that doesn't mean it's offensive. Offensive means you have the mentality of that we could chant any name. We don't have to follow this order of guru. That you're conscious of these. In other words, these 10 offenses, you're conscious of these things. Right? Does that make sense? So namabas means you're not necessarily you're not conscious of those, but you're not conscious of necessarily of Krishna either. Does that make sense? So whenever we like, then, we just take it. Chanting means it's basically you're either on the plane of pure chanting or it's offensive. But namabas means it's in between. It's not darkness, but the sun's not up. But the point is it's light. It's not dark anymore. Right? Does that make sense? So, conveniently, depending upon our own particular attachments and that conditioning, then we'll say this thing, what he's done, that's offensive. Point is what's the offense? You know what I'm saying? So if they saying, Ajamil, it was offenseless chanting, that doesn't say it's pure chanting. As Prabhupada says, there's offensive, there's clearing, and there's pure. So Namabas is clearing, means it's not you know, one or the other, but it's in the realm that therefore, then we ourselves are doing something that will go against our ability to chant. Does this make sense? Because that's why Ajahn Meal's pastime is so important in the sixth canto. Because before we get into the seventh canto with bringing out very much the aspect of pure devotional service, because before that we're dealing with devotees who are working within the realm of their occupational duties. They might have particular attachments and other things, but they're very nicely connecting them all to Krishna, right? And either they are on the platform of pure devotional service and they're setting an example of how to connect things to Krishna, or they're not, and by doing that, they bring themselves to the perfectional platform. But we see with seventh canto, then there's Prahlad Maharaj, he's just a pure devotee. You know, and then we see as he grows up later, then he'll take on the duties of running the kingdom and everything like that. Right? So then in the sixth canto, then you're bringing out the point of Ajahn Meal. It's about the holy name. That's the actual point. Because if you're going to appreciate pure devotional service dynamically, one has to have the faith that only the holy name and the process of devotional service, that is the only way to elevate yourself. There is no other process. No karma, no jnana, no yoga that can help you. Right? You can say, no, but, you know, if I do yoga, I feel good, and then I have the energy to do like that. But the point is it only becomes useful once you use it in Krishna's service. Right? We're talking about it as if it stands on its own as something useful. No, it's not. Yeah, okay. Makes for a nice health. You have a nice, healthy body. So many living entities have, you know, as healthy as you can get bodies. They're not devotees. So it's only when you use it in Krishna's service. I take a potato, I cook it and offer it to Krishna, and then it's now it's spiritual. But just that I have a potato, that doesn't make it transcendental. But if that potato is for Krishna, now it is. So when it touches Krishna, that's when it becomes like that. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful when one has the faith that, no, it's only devotional service. And then we can take religion, its natural form of religion is to be used to connect to Krishna. But to say religion stands on its own is a glorious thing, and only because I have religion, therefore I can do. Yeah, that's what the smartas say. And the smartas aren't necessarily known as the liberal ones. So that's the fun part, is how we can be, you know, how you say, extreme left and extreme right simultaneously. But that's not necessarily the ideal application of a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, that simultaneously, you know, a extreme leftist and extreme rightist at the same time. Amazingly. Right? That's not what the point is. It's about Krishna and his name are non-different. The same time as there is the element of, yes, you have the mechanical aspect of chanting. You're chanting and the words, the tongue is moving. It's making particular sounds and this and that. So that's not what makes the holy name. What makes the holy name is the chit potency, that when you've received the name from the devotees. Then chanting with that faith, that then has the potency. You know, otherwise, you know, Sahaja is all they're chanting, but they didn't receive the name. So therefore, then they're just making sounds. Maybe pious sounds by chanting God's names, they'll get material piety for it. But it doesn't mean they're going to get spiritual piety or devotional. That, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Verses 17 to 23, questions 4 to 6. Describe the wonderful deeds of the Lord. Where have religious principles gone after Krishna's disappearance from this planet? The sages continued, his transcendental acts are magnificent and gracious, and great learned sages like Narada sing of them. Please therefore speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations. Now that Lord Krishna has departed for his own abode, where can we find the true principles of religion? We never tire of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is glorified by hymns and prayers. Those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with him relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment. 17 to 19. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1.1.19, there is a great difference between mundane stories, fiction, or history, and the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The histories of the whole universe contains references to the pastimes of the incarnations of the Lord. The Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and the Puranas are histories of bygone ages recorded in connection with the pastimes of the incarnations of the Lord, and therefore remain fresh even after repeated readings. For example, anyone may read Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam repeatedly throughout his whole life and yet find them in the new light of information. Mundane news is static, whereas transcendental news is dynamic, inasmuch as the spirit is dynamic and matter is static. Those who have developed a taste for understanding the transcendental subject matter are never tired of hearing such narrations. One is quickly satiated by mundane activities, but no one is satiated by transcendental or devotional activities.
Yes. Because the devotional is always in contact with the Lord, means it's always in contact with this internal potency. Because our connection to Krishna, because we're saying we're always we're connected to Krishna, absorbed in Krishna, means we're doing so through his internal potency. Right? We're not doing that directly. It's always through the internal potency. Krishna expands his energy, then we're an expansion of that energy. So our connection to Krishna, we want to go to Krishna, still is through that energy. Right? So that internal potency, that's what makes it. So on the mundane platform, even though the transformation of the internal potency is what's giving the potency and the qualities to the elements that we're involved in and the actions that we're using, but we attribute it to the external energy, so it's static, right? And the jiva is not static; it's dynamic; it's alive. So the material energy is static, and it's also unconscious. So it doesn't it's not something we can relate to. We relate to people who are conscious, right? Things that are conscious. Even if you're there all alone and there's a bug walking by, you know, it's a point of focus that, you know, you can interact with the bug, you know, but you're just sitting there alone. You're not interacting with anything around you. So make sense? So we distinguish. So therefore, in the material energy, we can never be happy. It's static, because what is dynamic, we don't recognize that that's what makes it dynamic. We don't recognize that it's Krishna that and his potencies that makes whatever on the mundane platform we're working with makes it seemingly, it means that's the dynamic element. So we take it that, oh yes, this material energy is dynamic. It's not as static, but it's able to carry. It's like a wire. It can carry Krishna's potency. But we attribute it to this, the wire. It's like this, there was once, I think, because you go back into the Roman time, then I think in Rome, I don't know if it was everywhere or just some places, you know, they actually had running water because they had the aqueduct and all that. So some people had it where the water actually came into their house and they had a tap, right? And so then some, you know, and another aristocratic gentleman was visiting, you know, some friend's house that was in Rome because he was out in the country. So he didn't have that, you know, they just had their wells and stuff. And so he thought that by getting that tap and putting it into the wall of his house, he'd have running water. But no, that's not going to happen. It's because it's connected to the running water. That's, it's able to carry the running water. That's what's there. So your different material elements and their combinations are able to carry different qualities of Krishna. That's all. And that's why we see the variety, because different combinations of the material energy are able to manifest different qualities of Krishna. And so we're surrounded by Krishna's qualities coming through all these different forms of material energy, but we attribute those qualities to the dead matter itself when that's not the way it is. It's by Krishna's potency, because even the dead matter is a potency that it's able to carry certain things. Yes, no? Okay. So then, unless there's some other question, we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki jai, Jainatai Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bhagavad, Hari Bhagavad, Jainatai.